I'd like to bring this meeting of House State Affairs to order. Today is the 26th of July. Wow, we're here in July. And we have before us House Bill 3005, which is sponsored by the committee. And just so everyone understands that the committee was contacted before introduction to see if they wanted to consider the subject, not to whether they approved of any particular portion, but whether they wanted to consider the subject, and that was agreed to, and so we came forward with this bill. And you should all have the sponsor statement and the bill, and there's also a packet with that starts with projected government takes at sliding scales from Econ 1. Just for reference, you might want to note on that that was prepared for House Resources Committee, and you'll notice that where we're talking about is in the lower right-hand corner, the highest threshold price they analyzed, $50, and the higher of the four progressivity elements at 0.35. And so those are simply giving government takes. We've asked for and are awaiting Econ 1 runs that would be similar to the graphs and the amounts of money that would be generated, as well as the percentage differences at different prices that will come forward. We do also have a fiscal note that just arrived, and that is helpful. So I think that before we get into the bill, I would like to just run over through the sponsor statement. I hope it's clear to everybody what this is, and remembering that every committee that has passed a PPT or a change in tax structure in the legislature, both on our side and the Senate side, have had a progressivity element in it. Some of those have been on the gross, some have been on the net. What passed out of House Resources was 0.3% on the gross, which is one increment down on that lower right hand on Econ 1's data. Of course, that was in conjunction with a total rewrite of the PPT for the initial part of the tax, which would have raised it from the ELF that we have right now, which is basically an average of a little less than 6% statewide, to the 22.5% on the net. So those two were in conjunction when this Econ 1 data went forward. So, and also from the Senate side, we got passed over here progressivity of 0.2 on the gross during the regular session. Going out of House Finance, we were looking at 0.25 on the net at $35 a barrel. And the $35 a barrel roughly corresponds with $50 a barrel. There will be some questions about what index to use and the differences between those indexes. What came out of House Resources, which several members here sit on, was using West Texas Intermediate. And part of the reasoning for that was that would be a index that no matter what happened with ANS West Coast or with producers on the North Slope, it could not be influenced or changed as an index. So it was more viewed as more of an independent index, and that's what we've incorporated here at this point. So what this bill does, 3005, it starts with a progressivity at 0.35%, and it starts it at $50 WTI index. The tax is not on the index price. The tax is on the gross value at the point of production, which means wellhead price in Alaska. So we're taxing production at the value of oil at the point of production, but the index of when that triggers is the $50 WTI. So we've got to make sure we keep those relationships in mind and that those are different. The WTI is only the index trigger. The tax is on wellhead value of Alaska crude. And then that increases between $50 a barrel and $150 a barrel at the 0.35%, and then it caps at $150 a barrel. And the reason it's constructed that way is that if we look at our production tax now, the production tax is 15%. That's modified by ELF for many, many fields, all fields in Alaska, but the actual production tax on gross is 15%. So if you add 15% plus 35%, you get that equal split or equal share that we, 50-50. That all the bills have decided, okay, this is where we want to cap the production tax. Because if you didn't cap that at some, let's say there was something really crazy and it price went to $300 or $400 a barrel for a short period of time for a month, you would actually end up taking 100% of the value in the property in the production tax. So that's why it caps at an equal share. And the so the 35%, which would be captured at the highest rates by this windfall property or progressivity tax, would add to the 15% of the current production tax. Even though that's not paid, if we had said in conjunction with the tax as paid, in other words, at ELF, it would have meant that those fields that were paying no production tax under ELF could actually end up paying more tax on the progressivity than fields such as Prudhoe Bay, which is paying about 9%. Okay, so what we didn't want to do is make this bill into a recapture of ELF for some fields. So that's why we use the entire production tax of 15% as combined with 35% gave us the equal share. And there, so that's a little explanation on that. And then the bill has a retroactive date to April 1st. And the payment is listed as two different ways. The payment is due 30 days after the effective date of the tax, not the retroactive effective date of the tax. And it can be made at that time, no interest due. If the company wishes to split that up into six equal payments after that effective date, then tax or the interest would be due as required under law on the unpaid balance, which is remaining during those 6 months. And that would be totally their option to take. So with that, let's take a look at, yes.
Just in the sponsor statement here in the second paragraph, just for clarity for everybody, talks about proposes a progressive production tax at a rate of 0.35% per dollar.
Yes, and this is Representative Gatto. Sorry, I didn't recognize you by name.
Sorry. And just for clarity, 0.35% is 35 one-hundredths of a penny or a dollar. I mean, it must be of a penny. 0.35, 3.5 cents. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, 0.35. You'd put two zeros in front of that. 0.0035.
That's not 3.5 cents. It's 0.35 of 1 cent. You mean?
Yeah. Oh, if it was 1% per dollar, that would be a penny. But it's less than 1%. It's only 0.35%. So it sounds like three.
It's a third of a penny.
Yeah, third of a penny per dollar. And I don't know if that was the intent for the amount here. It's easier when we talk about cents per dollar than it is percent per dollar.
We're talking about 3.5% per $10.
Well, that's it. That's it.
We're talking about
third
and
of
a
penny per dollar. Then.
Yeah.
That's a third of a cent per dollar.
That's correct. And over $100, between $50 and $150, that'll be $100, and you multiply that times, and it'll be 35%.
That's the way it's, that's right. You did it the way you wanted to.
Further questions before we get into the bill? Yeah.
On a different matter, I think there's a typo in the sponsor statement. The second to the last paragraph, it says at the rate proscribed in AS43.05.225, proscribed is prohibited.
Yep.
I think it means prescribed.
Where is this?
Prescribed. It needs to be prescribed, not proscribed.
P-R-E?
Mm-hmm.
You prescribed can, means prohibited.
Right. I don't think
it's... Prescribed? Okay. The rate set.
I'm looking at something different.
Set, set would work.
Allowed?
Oh, that was the old one.
Oh.
That was the...
I'm sorry, I have the old
Did,
one.
Do you have the one from out?
Nope.
Here.
Here. Oh, you got more? Thank you.
Yeah, if it, anybody has the draft sponsor statement that the committee was given that doesn't have the HB 3005, it just had a HB mm-hmm. without a number on it, just throw that away, and okay. there are some changes there. Thank you for catching that, and hopefully people will understand that what we didn't have the right staff here. Without staff, there's a lot of organization that falls through the cracks. I can assure everybody of that. Are there any other questions about the general?
I do have a question.
Yes.
The bill I have is the G version.
That's correct.
Okay.
If we will look at the first page of the handouts, it is the Econ 1, black and white, this one. You can see, let's just go down in the bottom right-hand corner there, and again, you'll see that that is a $50 threshold price and 0.35% increment, and of course, this is giving total government take, but it was just to provide analysis here for everyone, and I do want to draw everybody's attention to the fact that this was done in conjunction with a 2020 PPT, and under the PPTs that we've considering mm-hmm. the percent profits tax, gross taxes are deductible from the net profit. So that gives us another relationship. If this is used in conjunction with a net profit tax scheme, if we're able to reach consensus between the two bodies and or within our own body even, then on a net profits tax, then this can be used in conjunction with that. This is just talking about the progressivity element. And I would like to just state for anybody that's out there listening that the intention of introducing this bill is not to circumvent, to supplant, or replace a comprehensive bill that would work for, which is either based on the net or on the gross. If we're able to arrive at that consensus, that's, you know, I'm all in favor of it. But if we're not able to arrive at that consensus, what I think the committee is wanting to do is have a bill that we can go forward with to look at capturing some of the high oil prices. And that's just what this bill deals with. It only deals with capturing some of the, shall we say, windfall profits that were derived from high oil prices going back to April 1st. So it doesn't change the ELF system, doesn't change the production tax system, doesn't make a change to net or anything else, but it can be used in conjunction with either system. And again, that was obvious because we had progressivity proposed from the Senate on the gross, which passed over to us during the regular session, passed out of resources, it was on the gross progressivity in conjunction with a percent profits tax. And then in the, if it's decided to change this to net, we of course had several other bills that later came with a progressivity on the net in conjunction with a net profits tax. So. Hopefully what we'll be doing is looking at some of the elements of progressivity very deeply and figuring out what the one, what analysis committee wants on all of these things. Of course, the intention is not to move this bill out today. The intention is to look at it and see what research and analysis requests we have, and we'll get those back. We are adjourned from the House floor until Monday anyway, so even if we passed a bill out, it couldn't be read across. So the intention is to develop this and then see where the committee wants to go.
So, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Gruenberg.
So the intent of this would be, if we can't reach agreement on the rest, the legislature could at least pass this as a standalone bill.
That's correct, Representative Gruenberg. And this, right now, we've had Progressivity looking at recapturing some of those windfall profits only in relationship to a combined bill. And it can be separated, I believe, fairly easily, but this would give a template in case we need to go forward with just looking at the Progressivity if we are unable to reach consensus on the entire restructuring. And I think that, like I say, every committee that's passed a bill out has had a Progressivity element in the bill. And so I think that there's pretty unanimous agreement in the legislature that we need some Progressivity, and we just have to capture those high oil prices. And it'll be just a question of coming to some consensus that we think will work.
Yeah, I do not recall any amendments, and I didn't study every committee, and I didn't study what happened in the Senate on the floor, but at least on the House floor, I don't recall any amendments to eliminate the Progressivity concept. Am I correct that there wasn't any amendment by anybody anywhere to eliminate this concept?
I Representative Gruenberg, I don't recall any such. I mean, there were some amendments to modify the Progressivity element, the start point, net and gross.
But nothing to take it out.
Nothing to take it away.
That's a good starting point then.
So if we look at, we can individually look at that. If we look at the next page in there, what we obtained from the Department of Revenue was a series of prices for monthly wellhead price on ANS, and this is not done to the penny, but done to the dollar, rounded to the dollar. You see January through May are the average wellhead price per barrel, and that's from the Department of Revenue. And then the next one down is the Alaska North Slope average monthly volume in millions of barrels, January through May, going down. And they did not have the June numbers available as of this time. What I did down below is take the average value times the average volume. That'll be equal to the approximate monthly value. And remember, this is wellhead price, so there's going to be different prices in different fields. But this is just, at this point in time, looking at North Slope, because that's the vast majority of oil. However, do recall that this is a statewide bill, and you know, the intention, at least my intention, is saying that any time that oil is produced in Alaska that's over the $50 a barrel, some tax can be paid, even if they're right now paying zero severance tax. We should be recovering some of that just based on high oil prices. So this would apply to Cook Inlet and any other field as well, because again, it's just indexed for recovering some of the high value at high prices. So if you look down there, then you see the monthly value times WTI minus 50 times 0.35%, and that equals the tax due. So you can see the calculations across there that are made. And down below the line, you'll see that I have an estimated max tax, and you'll see that's $143. That's because, remember, we have about a $2 difference between WTI and ANS West Coast, So the price that we're going to be charging on is wellhead, and then you have about $5 difference when you take transportation and when you have taps. You take those two off, that's another $5. So it's about $7 difference between WTI and the gross value at the point of production. So you'd have $143 is where our estimated tax is, and then you that gives you your value of $3,575,000,000 for that month at $143 a barrel. And then you have at the 100%, because we've now reached $150 West Texas Intermediate times 0.35% equals the 35% tax rate. So that would be a maximum that would be generated under this bill in of $1,251.3. And of course, that's if we're getting a monthly value of $3,575,000,000. So even if it went up to $300 or $400, that right-hand figure would remain the same because the tax rate would remain the same. Now, if we pass a PPT or something else that goes up that isn't capped, then that would be a different, you know, this doesn't relate to that. Anybody have any questions on that spreadsheet? I was trying to do this in little Excel boxes, and I'm not an Excel person, so you'll see some different things in there. The next page that we have is from the Energy Information Administration. It is showing the monthly WTI spot price. That's the index we'd be using. So if you look down at 2006, which is the bottom line, they had January through May, and that's how we arrived at these numbers over here of the, if you'll look on the previous page where, let's say January, you'll see WTI minus 50 is 15.48. So the WTI index was 65.48, and you subtract $50 from that, so you end up with 15.48. So that's the index that's used throughout the bill, is WTI minus $50. So again, January would be 65.48 minus 50, left us with the 15.48 times our percentage. Representative Gruber.
Yeah, if by my calculation, if you subtract 50 from 65.48, it becomes 55 plus.
What's that again?
65 minus 50 is 15. I'm sorry.
You're talking January or?
I don't.
So talking about January, if you look across, you have value, volume, you have the total, that's the total value, and then you have WTI minus 50, which is the 15.48.
Yes.
And 65.48 subtract 50 should be 15.48.
And where does that appear? Right here. I see. I was looking at the wrong figure.
Yeah.
Okay. Does everybody see where the 15.48 is?
Okay. Where's the 65.48?
Yeah. Where's the
15.48 is right here.
But where's the 65?
65 is on the following page where it's the right down here on 2006 in January of 2006. Okay. That's where the WTI indexes are for back from 1986 through the current year. Now they went through June, and so you'll notice that on the calculation sheet, there's June is listed as the WTI minus 50 is 20.95 times the 0.35, which would give us a tax rate of 7.33, but there's blanks beside that because we don't have yet from Department of Revenue the value or the volume for the month of June. But since we had the I forgot to write June over there at the side. You might under May for the next line should read June. So we have the June index.
Mm-hmm.
WTI minus 50, and so we have the percentage of what would be charged per gallon.
Just a question.
Yes.
Do you recall we were talking about the volume being less than we had anticipated? Was there a shutdown in June of flow to account for the reduced volume? I kind of remember that, but I don't know if
somebody
it was June
said something
or was it May
that.
Or something.
June or July.
Well, you know, we have the problem with the pipeline that carried, like, I forget what percent. Maybe the administration will know, but it's, you know, like 7 to 12% or something like that of the North Slope volume came on that pipeline that was shut down that sprang the leak.
Oh.
And when it sprang the leak, you know, and the cleanup and all that stuff.
So I just wanted to see if that was May or June or.
I think we have folks from revenue that can probably answer that.
If you guys don't.
April and May sounds about right. And there's still some shut in, I believe.
Yeah, and can you go ahead and identify yourself for the.
My name is Sherry Nienhuis. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. And my understanding is that there is still some oil that's being shut in. I don't know the extent of it. I'm sorry. I believe we were somewhat about 2% off our forecast for fiscal year 06. And a lot of it was due to the shut-in wells.
Rip M. Gatto.
Absent the shut-in, would the oil, is the oil in continuous decline, or are we at, and is it 6%? Or is it 3%, or is it some other number?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I'm sorry. I don't have the exact numbers. We are in a continuous production decline based on our forecast that we put out in the spring of 2006. So yes, there is a continuous decline. I'd have to look at the percentages. I know I've heard 6%, but I'm not sure that that's correct.
Okay. And Mr. DeCause was saying 6%.
And just to
7%.
Follow up here for just a moment, you'll see that if you look at the, now these were provided per field by revenue, and you can see those in the column under volume, and they're up above as well. So there's some variability there. It actually looks like in May it actually came up some. I don't know whether people with high prices were sucking harder on pumps or what.
But, no, we're at.
But anyway, and I don't know what that fluctuation is, but that's, unless we added up columns wrong, that's, these are the figures that came from revenue. And right now, I hope people won't look too much at the decimal points in these figures, because what we've tried to do, we've got Econ 1, and hopefully we'll request revenue to give us they were really great because they came. Maybe it was you. You were running out of the office, and you sent us some stuff so that we were able to pull this together. And in that, there was a caveat that it was being done at the last minute as you ran to an airplane or something. So we really appreciated getting the information. And if there's changes or something, we fully understand that it's not, you know, this is just a time to get it there.
Sure. Jerry, did you want to say? And if I could add, I believe that was sent out from Anchorage yesterday afternoon. And each field does have a different wellhead value, and it has to do with the quality bank deductions or additions, and also the feeder pipe additions or deductions. So what was sent to your office was actually an array of wellhead prices by field. And what we normally do when we model is we volume weight those wellhead prices so that we have a volume weighted average. So yeah, this was for your analysis. I believe that's a real rough average, but I think it's a ballpark that you could work with.
Right, and I forgot to put that caveat on here that these were estimated, but want everybody to understand that what we're doing here is trying to get a rough analysis and not looking at the real fine decimal points at this point of conversation. Representative Gatto.
Thank you. This is going to be tough. Remember the slogan, no decline after 99?
I've heard it.
I can't forget that one. Can you identify that certainly hasn't occurred? We are declining after 99. Is there some factor that you have identified? Is it bad pipe, or is it actual that the closer a field approaches zero production, the decline increases or decreases?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I believe the reason we're seeing a decline in production is because we have not appropriately incentivized the oil companies to invest back in our fields in Alaska. And without that investment, you will see a natural decline in the field productions. And that would happen at any field, Prudhoe Bay, Parak, any fields will have a natural decline over time. That's just a natural thing that happens with oil production.
Representative Gatto, follow up?
I guess it's a technical question, but if you put a straw in the ground here and you suck, you finally get decreasing production, and so you need to put straws in different locations. Are we getting the straws in the ground or not? And that's what we're talking about when we talk about incentivizing production.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, yeah, I believe that's right. I believe, you know, the idea here is that we want to incent more exploration and drilling, and that has not been happening at the pace that we'd like. In addition to the problems with incentivizing drilling, we want to not only have them drill, but also if they drill, not penalize them for drilling a dry hole. And by having capital credits, we believe that we will appropriately incentivize someone to go out and take a chance and to drill that well, and to see if there's more oil, exactly as you discussed.
And Representative Gruenberg.
Did you
have a follow-up?
I did, but I might have 100, and I'll just limit it to one. Can we be gamed by a bunch of accountants who say, we can drill dry holes? In fact, it's to our advantage. And I guess that's the question. Because we want to incentivize yeah. oil coming out of the ground, not sticking holes in the ground. And so by saying that, is your statement that we're working against ourselves by saying, hey, 7 out of 8 holes are dry. Don't penalize them for the 7 and incentivize them for the 8th, but rather incentivize all 8 of them. And I'm curious to know what your position is.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I believe, you know, the cost of drilling a well would prohibit a company from just drilling it knowing they're going to drill a dry well. It's somewhere around $20 million to drill a well. And that $20 million, you know, if the state picks up 40% of it or 60% of it, they still are out some $10 or $8 million. So I don't think any company looks at making capital expenditures simply for the purpose of having a tax write-off, because a tax write-off is not 100%. Not only that, of course, we know that most companies have to answer to their shareholders. And for them to be going out there and drilling dry wells for the purpose of having a tax decrease, I don't think would make a whole lot of sense.
I wanted to follow up on that. Just for a moment, under the existing ELF, there is a tax advantage for having more wells producing, because the average volume per well is a big multiplier of how you reduce your taxes. So people could actually spend money to and keep wells that aren't producing hardly anything to lower their tax rate under ELF. I mean, that's one of the big problems that we have with ELF, as I understand it. Now, I'm not projecting that everybody's trying to do this, but I think that's one of the reasons why we're trying to change the tax structure, isn't it?
Representative Seaton, yes, that's correct. And the more producing wells you have, the lower the ELF is, and if it's producing in, you know, the relationship between the wells and the volume. However, there's a difference between a developmental well, which is a well that is within a field that you know is producing, versus a wildcat well, which is one where someone goes out into an area that they believe there's oil, but they're not exactly sure, or the certainty is less.
You're talking about the incentive credits if you're 3 miles away, I'm not wanting to get into that, but I just wanted to make sure that we understood that one of the reasons why ELF is broken is because we have given incentives to drill wells to lower your tax rate, even if they're marginally producing, because it's the number of wells within a field gives an average volume. You don't pay per well, you pay on the average number. So if you have more wells, even if they're not producing, you can lower your tax rate, and that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why the profit structure of taxing profits is gets away from that, because it doesn't matter how many wells you get the profit out of, the tax rate is based on the profit, and the more you wells you put in that aren't paying and they're costing you money, you lose lose money as well. So did you want to further comment on
that? No, I was just going to say you have that correct. Yes, that's right, because the more wells that you do have within a particular field, those will bring down your ELF and lower your tax rate also.
Mm-hmm. But you also have to remember that once you're at zero, you can't go any lower than zero. So, and most of the fields are zero in Alaska under ELF. Representative Gatto, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, just a follow-up. And I guess the way we're looking at it is, you are mostly looking at your tax rate, and the accountants, if they say, hey, drill a $15 million well, but then our rate for everything drops by a percentage point, then it's just arithmetic. Go spend the $15 million and reduce our taxes, overall taxes. So that's what we're really working on now, is we don't want you to have a lower tax burden by gaming the system by saying, I know what my accountants are telling me to do. Rather, we're looking to increase production. And so I guess the question, and it isn't a question, it's kind of a statement and an understanding, that when we work on something like this, we don't have enough information on what it costs to do something in return for what you save. So we, and the chair, you know, comes up with a plan here, and we're curious. I'm curious. He's probably curious too. What will be the end result of doing something? Because we always have the law of unintended consequences, where somebody sees something and you go, that was never the intention. Mm-hmm. So we're depending on you to come back and say, here's what I know.
Yeah, Representative Gatto, through the chair, I don't have this material with me, but I do know that there's been a presentation by the oil companies, and I've seen it, and it talks about the amount of capital spending that they've made over the years, and I believe it was in 2001 that they actually boosted their spending by quite a bit, and you'll see that the production decline leveled out a little bit shortly thereafter. It's not going to be immediate, because a capital spending is not going to, you know, have an immediate effect that year, but it did stem the decline somewhat. And that's visible through that capital spending pattern. So as much as we'd maybe like to build a tax around, you know, increasing or maintaining productivity or production, the reality is the increased or maintained production has to involve additional capital spending. And in order to incent additional capital spending, that's why we're doing these credits, or at least the PPT proposes credits.
And I just want to bring everybody back to what the bill we have before us doesn't deal with any of those issues, doesn't deal with the credit issues, doesn't deal with the underlying tax, doesn't deal with ELF. What this deals with is only at prices above $50 a barrel, which is, from the testimony that almost all the committees have, is outside the target range of where the oil companies are making their decisions on whether it's sanctioned projects or not. You know, basically we've had the testimony, it's from, you know, 35 to 45 or 30 to 50, and none of the oil companies want to tell us what their exact parameters are. But we've had ex-oil company executives that have said that it's close to within this range. So the 50 WTI was selected in House Resources to be above the range, starting at the range above where the decision making takes place. In other words, maybe there's a 5% when they target and decide to sanction a project, maybe it's a 5% chance that they look that the price will be below 20, and 5% that it'll be above 50. And so their decision making process is to go forward with projects are based on within that $35 to $45 range. And that range, I'm not classifying that they've testified that that's the exact range, because they won't tell us the dollar amount. and that's proprietary information for them. But those, that's why we have this at $50. And remembering again that what we're doing here is we're not talking about the incentive for doing a well or anything. We're saying that if the price just jumps above the range at which they are targeting to make their profits on, that the state for our oil will recover some of that high oil price profit. And that's all this bill deals with. Representative Gruenberg had a series of questions.
Well, I had kind of just one question, and it was going a little bit on what Representative Gatto was saying. And a lot of us on this committee are not on resources. None of us are on finance. We dealt a little bit with this, those of us who are on ways and means, but not a lot. And it seems to me that one thing that we as a legislature ought to look at maybe a little more are ways, not just using the tax laws, but partly that, and that's what we've been talking about here, to make sure that we recover as much of the oil as possible. Because the ethanol issue, the gas issue, and everything else, if we are going to be competitive in Alaska, one of the things we ought to be trying to do is recover as much of the petroleum product as possible in the fields that we have it. Anything you'd like to say on that subject?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair.
It's a very basic question.
The thing that comes to mind is that I think what we're going to see in future years is that we're going to see additional heavy oil coming online. Heavy oil is more expensive to produce typically, and especially if we were to have a gas contract,
sure.
If they go out and explore and find new areas, it will probably likely be heavy oil. I guess to address your question about recovering as much of the of our oil
from
as
the
we,
known fields the
as we can, it would be appropriate for us to allow additional technological improvements through incentivizing that in order to have greater access to oil that's currently harder to produce. I see that, you know, within the next 5 to 10 years, I think technology is going to advance to the point where we can probably recover some of that heavy oil cheaper than we do now. But currently, it's still in the beginning stages.
Through the chair. And I'm sorry, is your name Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T?
Nienhuis.
Would you spell it, please?
Yes, Nienhuis.
That was easy.
You.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Ms. Nienhuis, is there any way that we could speed that process up a little bit, that the Department of Revenue would have any thoughts on, or you would?
Representative Gruenberg, the chair, I think it gets back to the original proposal, and that would be provide some incentive to have them keep their money here and spend their money in Alaska. Currently, we do not have any such incentive other than the couple of credit systems we have. But as far as within the fields that are not 3 miles apart from each other, we don't currently have any kind of incentive to keep.
What would you suggest? I'm sorry.
I just wanted to interject that Pedro Vadmir's in House Finance yesterday brought up some excellent points on the taxing on the net versus the gross, and that one of the things that he was saying is if we tax on the gross and we put incentives in, what he anticipates is in the next number of years, technology is going to reduce the cost of recovering that heavy oil. It could be by bacteria, it could be by who knows what mechanisms that technology will do. And therefore, we have a big chance if that happens and the recovery becomes cheaper for heavy oil of leaving money on the table, because they're going to lower their costs, but will have had to generate a tax structure on gross based around the current costs. And so when the costs go down, we're not taxing on the profits, which they get more of if their costs go down. We're taxing on a system that we have instituted under a high cost regime. So it, you know, is a very interesting twist and something else, you know, that needs to be thought of as far as that. And so I wanted to bring that up because that seemed to deal on your question. But we have a whole commission, the AOGC, and their whole job is to make sure that we cover the maximum hydrocarbons throughout every field in Alaska, and they determine how much gas can be taken out and how much has to be left there. And that's one of the contentious issues that's coming up, is how much will AOGC allow gas to be taken out of several of the reserves, or do they have to leave more of that gas there to recover the oil? And so, but I just want to bring back that that's a very basic subject that is way beyond the scope of this bill. This bill was only talking about recovery of value to the state from our oil that goes out when the price exceeds WTI 50.
No, I understand, and I okay. appreciate your letting me get a little bit of field of this for those of us who came in late, as they used to say. And I appreciate that.
Is there one group? Go ahead and follow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I would appreciate any additional views you have, Ms. Nienhaus.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, you're exactly right, Representative Seaton. What Pedro says is correct. Right now, you know, there's a certain amount of money that needs to be spent in order to get the harder to extract oil. We see that decreasing in the future. You could just look to the Canadian tar sands and see that at one point that was very expensive to extract. The price is coming down. We expect to see that in Alaska as well. So what Dr. Ramirez pointed out is that you want to structure a capital credit mechanism, not such that you're stuck with paying that same amount for the capital improvements, but that it would, you know, be adjusted based on how much it actually costs the companies to do this. And that's exactly what the PPT does, is the PPT is actually on the price net of their costs. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense that, you know, as costs go down, then we don't give them a credit for more than what they actually spend.
I understand, and I appreciate this, and I know this is extremely complicated. I don't want to monopolize this, and I thank you.
Yeah, I just might refer you to the bill that the House Resources passed, the House Finance, because we did pass out a bill on incentivizing heavy oil, but we tied it to guaranteeing the oil companies that the price would be $50 or above in the fall from the 10 years from now. So what it was here's a credit that you can have, but if the price is over average price for the next 10 years is over $50 a barrel WTI, you owe us the credit back. Mm. Okay, so I think that as we go forward, we need to look at credits and say they need to be self-adjusting too. They need to adjust to reality, because if we don't have the credits price sensitive, we could be incentivizing and giving away a lot of money when it's perfectly economic to do it. I mean, if the price is $100 a barrel, we don't need to be giving capital credits to incentivize heavy oil, because heavy oil is very economic at $100 a barrel. And so that's where we're trying to get at in this bill, is saying when the price is over $50 WTI, hey, all the economic costs have been recovered and all those kind of things, and there's really good profits in there, and at those higher profits, we want to share a little bit more.
My question was more basic, through the chair, and I didn't mean to monopolize anybody, any other members on this. We've been talking, and this whole subject has talked simply in the terms of tax credits, and I was thinking whether there are anything other than tax credits as a concept that could incentivize if that's the right word, the development, the complete development of these known fields. And I don't know if it would be additional money for research or grants or partnerships in some manner for the costs of these developments. But it seems to me that maybe through the university or something we can be looking at this. And I realize I'm getting way afield. I'm sorry.
That's fine. And I would just point out before we go on that tax credits is one way that we do it, and taxing, allowing the cost to be deducted and taxing on net instead of on gross is the other way. And both of those things incent the heavy oil because you get to subtract your cost before paying your taxes. So,
but what, I think, and I think I'm speaking for a lot of people who have concerns about tax on the net as opposed to tax on the gross, and that people feel that it's too easily manipulable.
Not a word, Max.
That's not a word.
I appreciate if you'd use the word now.
It maybe I have the accent on the wrong syllable. But.
Well, one thing that we have here is this is a tax on the gross. So we don't have to worry about that on this one, unless we get into an amendment to change it. Let's go on to another page here. You'll see there's an excerpt from Dr. Van Meer's second report on progressivity from 5 March 06. And you'll see his option two is the basic tax rate of any of WTI minus 50 times, you know, and he has that basic tax rate at, he had it as a 0.25 in here. But the recommendation, the maximum recommended rate is 50%. And at 0.25, you see he has that reaching that at $250. So anyway, just a little caveat so everybody can see where things are. That is, that this is not an idea that is, you know, we're trying to coalesce around a number of ideas. And then if we look at the next page, the last page there, you'll see that there's the, just a sheet from yesterday's presentation in House Finance of gross versus net heavy oil. And you'll see that there's the shipping and the pipeline costs that were the $2 and the $3. So just to give everybody a little bit of backup, and of course these are, these numbers are flexible and these are kind of average ballpark numbers, but they're presented by the department as far as the costs of those things that we deducted earlier to get down to the $7 difference between WTI and wellhead. Okay, are there any other general questions before we look at the bill specifically? And what I'd like to do is anybody that has any requests for analysis or other information, to make those requests, and then we'll try and get that information generated to the committee for our next meeting on the bill. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, and just a thought that I had mentioned to the chair, that I would like to see all of the other progressivity provisions that have been introduced either in the form of committee amendments or floor amendments so that we can contrast and compare this with those. Now, I realize in some senses that's going to be apples and oranges because this is part and parcel of a total package with the rest of the bills. But at least it would give us some general idea, and I guess this is kind of unique because I guess there has never been another standalone progressivity bill. So it's kind of difficult to compare those. Maybe the chair and the committee doesn't feel that would be helpful, and I'm just wondering if anybody feels that would or wouldn't be helpful.
Well, I have no problem with trying to pull all the other progressivity.
I don't want to confuse the issue.
No, I think that that's good, and also I think that we'll look, we've got some progressivity. You've got this one here from the March 6th one of Pedro Van Meer's. We also have a sum that went to 0.4 from Daniel Johnson, and I think the latest recommendation from Econ 1 we had was 0.375. So we'll bring those and pull those out and get them so that the committee has those to look at.
I'm sorry. Whatever you think would be helpful.
One other thing that as we go through this, I've noticed that when this got constructed, I don't see that it, we have it there. I was worried that we were including royalty oil in here, and we wouldn't want to have them paying on royalty oil, but that's on, I just see it now on page 1, line 9. It says, less any oil, the ownership or right to which is exempt from taxation, so that would be the royalty oil would be included in that. So just for everybody's information, this doesn't include royalty oil. Does anybody else that have any other requests for information at this time? Let's see, there were some questions. Does anybody have any questions on the structure of the bill there, that it's West Texas Intermediate less 50? Yes.
Sorry. This seems to be related to a tax on oil. Do we want to consider such a thing for tax on gas?
No. Personally, I think that at this point in time, if we just focus on oil, we'll have oil taxes. We won't get into the problems with contracts. We won't get into problems with any other of the anomalies that might come up with Henry Hub or not Henry Hub or Cook Inlet or anything else. Oil is, unless the committee definitely wants to do that, I would suggest that we just stay with oil in this bill, because it's something that's very simple, and it's something that the big thing is that we want to go back with this and collect money that is being earned by the state, right? Being earned, and right now we don't have a gas line, we don't have a huge gas sales, so there are no, even if we put an index in there, there's no money that goes back to April that we would be collecting. Unless there's...
I would concur with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
This is a complicated number, just the oil.
Okay.
Let's leave the gas for another day.
And I would like to point out on page 2 that you see where not more than $150 a barrel, the index price is 100. Now, there's a relationship between that and the 35.35%, because that gives us the 35%. So if we have a suggestion to change that to 0.4 or 0.3, some other number, then we'll need to adjust the $150 a barrel. So what we would do is we would say, let's say it went to 0.3, we would say, what price would we want to cap this out at 0.3 to give us 35%? Okay, So the idea of page 2, line 3, the $150, the index is 100. What we're wanting to do is have that number, that 150, be the amount that generates 35%, because the 35% plus the 15% base production tax gives us the equal share that every bill that's gone forward has contained. Does everybody understand that, or is there any confusion or the relationship between the $150 and the 0.35? Okay. Let's see. And then that next section C, just goes in to say that, if the WTI index goes away, then the department will use some other equivalent figure that would make it get there. Section 2, I think Representative Gruenberg had a question on, and this is the transition and the retroactivity section, so that regulations can be written to get that. This does not give them the ability to create the retroactivity or not. That's in on page 3, section 6. Section 3, page 3, retroactivity, this makes it retroactive to April 1st. Mm-hmm. So the section 2 transition is allowing regulations to be written, but the way it reads, it sounds like they may adopt it or may not adopt it, but mm-hmm. but we are adopting in statute a retroactive right now of April 1st.
I'm slightly confused. So we'll get
just
to your last sentence.
What was that again?
Okay.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The this lines 19 to 24 at some point, I'd like that to be more completely explained. I'm slightly confused and have been, not okay. only on this point, but generally, but particularly on this point. That, so at some point, if you
sure,
can do that.
That's fine, and we can talk about that. And again, the remaining part of Section 2 says that you can make a single payment or six equal payments. And if you decide the six equal payments after the effective date, then you pay the interest on the unpaid balance. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's a pretty simple bill. Explain. Representative Gatto.
Line on page 2, line 22.
Page
2, line 22.
Yes.
Where you use the word may apply, if you eliminated the word may and simply said applies retroactively to April 1, 2006, if DOR expressly designates, et cetera. As long as we have if DOR expressly designates and you keep the word may in there, then the may is allowing, even if they do, we may not do it. And so I just want to clarify why we have the word may in there.
I will ask the drafters, but then what I've gotten so far is that page 3, line 6, designates that it is retroactive, and that this portion is simply the way they write to give the department the ability to write regulations. And but I will check on that with legal, because they drafted that portion. Are there other questions? I know that two representatives need to leave pretty quick.
Three.
And Sherry, did you were signed up. Did you have any other comments for us or anything else here that you wanted to point out? We appreciated getting the fiscal note. I haven't had, none of us really had a chance to analyze it yet.
Representative Seaton, no, I don't really have any more real comments. I was just going to, I guess, hearing that you said this is sort of a stopgap measure to more or less put into place something to capture some of the high prices, I think is a good plan. I think you still have some problems because the ALF would still be in place. So you still have some fields like Kuparik that wouldn't be paying anything but the increased tax on for the price. So you still have quite a large percentage of oil that's not paying the regular severance tax under this bill. But just to point out, on the last page of the fiscal note, you'll see at $40, there's no difference between the status quo and the tax from bill, because it doesn't exceed the price threshold in which the additional tax kicks in. $60, you can see there is an additional amount from this additional tax. And so that would basically be the difference between the status quo and the tax and the bill. So $500 million or so in fiscal year 07. And that's all I have on that.
Great. And that's assuming an average price of $60. And did you have a chance to look at our little spreadsheet there? And I think that we had one that would have been a $60, would have been about February. It would be a little over $60. It would be 61, 63, so that would have been February. So anyway, we can probably compare a few things back there and see where we are. But I appreciate this spreadsheet, and we'll have to analyze it.
What's going on?
Any other questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on this bill at this time? We're going to hold this bill. We're requesting this. We have analysis from Econ One coming. So we'll, the only requests for data that I have are Econ One analysis and graphs and amounts. Also, all the other progressivities from committees, floor, and consultants. And anything else? Representative Groomer.
Yeah. In order to answer Representative Gatto's question on line 22, page 2, the transition period, it's that subsection is very technical, and it relates to a provision in the Administrative Procedures Act. And I would just ask that the staff transmit to all the members for the next meeting a copy of AS 4462240. That will, and I'll be able to then to explain using that statute what this does. It just simply conforms to another statute in the APA, and it I didn't understand it until I read the statute. But if you put that on the agenda, then I can tell what it does.
We'll have it there. Representative Gardner, before you have to leave, do you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd simply say that the explanation we've had is probably adequate.
Does anybody else?
You mean on that point?
Uh-huh. On that point. Does anybody else want that administrative code?
I'd like it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Fine.
Representative Elkins, do you have?
I'm fine.
Representative Ramos? Nope. Anything else? Then we will be adjourned and we'll. Wait a minute. We will. Let's set a date of Tuesday at 8 a.m. for our next meeting.
If you calendar that.